This is the Big E Sports Show
on the Sports Map Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com, the Big E Sports Show. And I'm your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell. You can always go back. If you missed hour one and you are just tuning in on this Saturday morning, podcastarena.com, my fabulous producer, Jack, he's got all of our interviews posted there. And we love to hear from our listeners. Chime in on the conversation, info@eradiosports.com or live at Twitter at eradiosports. Hey, are your wiper blades, are they chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see their selection. O'Reilly Auto Parts, they will install your wiper blades free of charge. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. We're going to continue our NFL news and notes and get you ready. In fact, we're going to talk about the Monday Night Football game that, of course, is between the Patriots and the Jets. The Jets struggling mightily this year. But, Jack, what do you think about the Patriots? I mean, are they making a mistake by keeping Cam at quarterback? What say you?
It depends on what the end goal is. If the end goal is trying to make the playoffs, absolutely. But if the end goal is trying to get a lower draft pick and maybe trade up for a guy like, oh, I don't know, Trevor Lawrence, I think they should continue to roll with Cam Newton. You look at this New England roster, it's not even that good. It's not even as good as it was last year. Julian Edelman's out. I mean, Stephon Gilmore, I'm surprised he didn't get traded in this trade deadline. And then, of course, you have the McCourty twins and the safeties. That's kind of all you got. Everyone else is a slow wide receiver, a bust. Sony Michel is hurt. This Patriots team is not a good team, and not to mention the 8 opt-outs for this COVID-19 season. The Patriots are in a good position to get a high draft pick and potentially get a future quarterback in this draft.
So what has changed for Cam Newton? Because don't we remember at the start of the season, I mean, he got off to a good start.
He was only one play away from beating the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle in week 2 in the season. He was also only one play away from beating the Buffalo Bills last week. I would just want to say it's kind of tough luck, and I want to say that the film has caught up to Cam Newton because now people are seeing an easier way to stop him when he runs left or runs right. It seems like he wants to still be a mobile quarterback in his 30s, and that's just not going to make it anymore.
We'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out. Of course, the Jets-Patriots Monday Night Football. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
Is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, sportsmapradio.com. The Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Twice is nice. You can go back and listen to all of our interviews over the 2 hours. Podcastarena.com and email the show info@eradiosports.com and always live on Twitter @eradiosports. As a reminder, at O'Reilly Auto Parts, you are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest prices. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, already in our program, we have had a ton of college football NFL talk, and we're ready to get you for some of the big games today and tomorrow. Even we talked some Monday Night Football. But right now, we're going to shift gears and get you ready for a book review. We have extended an invitation to Dr. Pat Ivey, who has over 20 years of collegiate experience in athletic performance roles. He joined the University of Louisville staff as an associate athletic director for the student athlete health and performance back in January of 2019. He also played college football at the University of Missouri. I think, looking at his bio, I think he played in the Big 8 days. So it is a true honor to have with us on the program. We're going to highlight his brand new book. It is titled The Table. What Are You Leaving on the Table? True honor to have with us. And that is Dr. Patrick Ivey. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. We are certainly looking forward to highlighting your new book. But I have to tell you, I mean, 2020, you know this well, it has been a very difficult, it's been a crazy year. So kind of give us the pulse on the Cardinals and just the football season. I mean, how challenging has it been for the staff and for the players, you know, muscling through this COVID-19?
Well, every day is a new day, and we look forward to the challenge. We know it's going to be a challenge, and we've come to embrace it. And we have a little inside motto, say, hey, keep it rolling. And that's what we do every day. We make sure we're communicating with each other. We're prioritizing our student-athletes' health and safety and just trying to balance that with all of the different logistics. But we've got a great team here. We've got a great leader here, Vince Tyre, our AD, and Coach Satterfield, Coach Mack in basketball. So we've got a good family here.
As a result, today's game against Virginia, as I understand, it's been postponed. So do they have anything on the calendar? I mean, when it will be rescheduled? Because I know your athletes, they want to get out there and play.
Yes, we are working on the rescheduling of it, and we both have bye weeks the following week. So it's looking like we're going to be able to play the following week.
Everyone is feeling the impact of COVID-19. So, you know, Pat, in the position that you're in with Louisville Athletics, I mean, what is your message to your student athletes to help them cope with this pandemic? Because it is very frustrating. I mean, when you're an athlete, you understand this well. I mean, you're accustomed to getting up, working out. You're always on the move and the go. And then when you have to go sit into quarantine for 14 days, I mean, that is very challenging.
Absolutely. And you have to start before this. You can't wait for bad things to happen or challenging times to happen. You have to prepare in advance. So when I was coaching, and I would tell my athletes, hey, be prepared to have the greatest day you've ever had while you're receiving some of the hardest, toughest, most challenging information you've ever heard. And several of them have always said, coach, hey, this is one of those times you told me to be ready, and I was. And so I think you have to prepare in advance.
You know, you talk about preparation for the athletes, how to cope with a situation like this. The mental distress is there. But, you know, I'm a parent, right? And so I have to wonder what some of the parents are feeling right now, because you kind of feel helpless. I mean, what are some strategies and solutions for the parents out there? Because they're experiencing this and they want to help their son or daughter.
Well, I'm in the same boat. I have a senior and a sophomore in high school. And I'm concerned about their health and safety and mental welfare every day. So
right.
It's a constant checking in. It's kind of reading the pulse. It's asking them how their day went, even though when they want to have the one-word answers. It's just constantly trying to be connected and letting them know you care. I think it's challenging for them for sure, just like it is for all of us. But we have to be trying and attempting to make those connections.
Dr. Pat Ivey is our very special guest here in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. He is the Associate Athletic Director for Student Athlete Health Performance at Louisville. And let's move ahead. We're a little short on time, but we definitely want to shine the spotlight on your new book. It is titled The Table. What are you leaving on the table? And I love when you open it up, I mean, you find some wonderful scripture verse. I mean, Proverbs 9:9. So tell us about that. And it's all about maximizing your opportunities as an athlete, because this is only one chapter in your life, and you want to make the most of it.
Absolutely. And some of my friends actually pushed me to write this book. And as I moved towards administration, I knew I was losing some of that day-to-day interaction with athletes. I figured I want to be able to pass the baton on and have them carry it. And what better way than to put it in words inside of a book? So as an athlete, I had a lot of opportunities, and there some opportunities I passed on, some opportunities I wasn't aware of, and there's lots of information that I learned as a coach and as a student athlete and trying to play professional. So mm-hmm. I thought, what better way to pass on that information than to actually put it inside of a book?
Well, there's all kinds of great nuggets inside your new book. We are visiting with Dr. Patrick Ivey. The title of his book, you can go anywhere online and get a copy. It is titled The Table. What are you leaving on the table? And you've had a fascinating journey. I mean, you grew up in Detroit, Michigan. And you even talked about the book, it's Survival of the Fittest. So who had the biggest impact on you as a young man when you were growing up? Is there one particular coach that stands out?
Oh, wow. My first Little League coach, Coach Brock, was so tough and so loving at the same time. I don't know how you can be that tough and that loving at the same time, but It is exactly what we needed. You know, growing up in inner city Detroit, we needed someone that could match the environment, but also give us that internal connection that we needed to be able to show us through role modeling. And so he was that person for us.
The title of the book is The Table. What are you leaving on the table? And unfortunately, we are already up against the clock. Share with our listeners, what are they going to find when they purchase your new book?
I think they'll find some information that's inspirational, but I actually dictated a good portion of the book into my computer, and I spoke as a coach as though I was speaking to a group of athletes, parents, or coaches. So I think they'll feel that passion come through authentically.
Patrick Ivey has been our very special guest, Sports Map Radio Network. And quickly as we wrap up, connect with our audience. Pat, where can they find you online, and where can they go get a copy of your book?
Absolutely. If they go to my website, pativey.com, so PATIVEY.com, they can get all of my information. I have podcasts. I've got all sorts of information for athletes and coaches and parents.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us. You stay safe, and we're going to believe 2021 is going to be a better year. Okay, Pat?
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us on this Saturday morning. Always live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info@eRadioSports.com, and podcastarena.com. Perhaps you need a replacement part or a tool for your repair, maintenance, or restoration project. O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. You can trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They know what it takes to get the job done right the first time. In fact, professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Stop by and talk to one of their professional parts people today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Well, here we are already an hour or two. We're going to power down just a bit. We're going to take time for a very special book review. It is titled One for the Memory Banks. It is a wonderful golf memoir that shares some amazing stories about the game in Scotland, in the UK. And we are so delighted for the very first time in this golf segment to have with us, and that is the author, Luke Rees, and it is his first book. Congratulations on the book. And Luke, thank you so much for carving out some time and joining us this morning.
Alyssa, I couldn't be more thrilled to be able to talk about it with you. I'm a big fan of your show, and I really appreciate you having a chance to let me talk about it a little
Listen,
bit. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I tell you, we always love to tee it up and let it fly and talk about the game of golf. And it's always one of my favorite segments in our 2-hour show. And you know, in this book, I mean, you share your fascinating journey, your adventure with your golf mentor, but kind of pull back the curtain. You know, everyone's got a story to share about how they got introduced to the game of golf and this amazing sport. I mean, how did that happen? Happened for you?
Well, it's sort of a funny or interesting story in one way. I was a tennis player and played college tennis growing up, so similar to your son who plays for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a golfer and I was a tennis player. And I didn't really know much about golf, didn't really understand it, didn't get it. But I joined Wilson Sporting Goods and I was a sales rep for Wilson Sporting Goods over in Europe. And somebody turns to me and says, you know, they got a reasonable golf line, too. You're going to have to learn how to play golf. And I'm like, yeah, that won't be that hard.
Uh-huh.
I play tennis. And the ball's not moving. So I was like, yeah, I can figure this one out. And right about the week before I went out to go play, to go join the company, a friend calls me and says, hey, you know, we're going to be in Ireland. Let's go play this course. He names it. And I'm like, yeah, fine. Sounds good. And I showed up, and it was a course called Ballybunion, and the wind was blowing at about 40 to 50 mile an hour wind. I am literally, honest to God, like a first time golfer. And I stepped up and I thought, well, okay, this can't be that hard. And I'm wearing a barber jacket like an idiot. And I step out and I'm like, I mean, you know, I might have shot, you know, this is a 190 type number, but I didn't
come close
to even like holing out any shots or anything. And I played 11 holes. I paid my caddy. I stayed up with the group. I picked up the ball the whole time, and I was like, okay, this is not fun. This is not a good thing. And I'm wearing, like, you know, cotton shorts, you know, cotton pants, and it's cold, it's windy and rainy. So I'm like, I don't think this golf thing's for me. 2 weeks later, I'm thinking out, like, okay, I got to learn how to hit the ball, and I'm practicing with wiffle balls down in a warehouse. And I asked some older Scottish guy. I said, you know, so, Alan, you know, what would you do? And he looks at me and says, you know, as a golfer, you'd make a fine salesman. And I'm like, oh, you know, I shouldn't run your clothes. So he's like, oh, my God. And he embarrasses me. And then I said, well, what would you fix? Or what tips would you give me? And this is the kind of guy who's like the Arnie Palmer. He's got that kind of personality where he can just pull everybody in. And he pulls everybody in closely and he goes, let me give you one tip. And he says, don't ever touch. And he points to the grip, this part of the club in front of a golf pro.
Right. So you had a bad grip. Oh, my gosh.
No, he said, your job is to hold the pen and paper and write orders and tell him how good the club is. Don't waggle. Don't address the ball. Don't do these things. And the whole room is just absolutely cracking up. And they're like, okay, this is funny. This young sales rep is basically being, you know, upgraded. A tennis sales rep is being upgraded by an old golf guy. And, I, you know, that would have been it. And then a week later, he sends me, and this is a guy who was pretty senior to me at the time, sends me this book. And it's called, it was Donald Steele's Classic Links of the UK.
Yeah.
And he sends me the book and says, read this. Start on page 37. This is where my home course is, and go practice. You know, learn your swing, practice, and I'll start. I'll take you to some of those places. And I was like, you know, he didn't need to be that nice. He didn't need to care. It was one of those where it suddenly happened, and I thought, you know what? That experience at Ballybunion can't be what golf's all about because too many people love this sport. And I just started getting into it. And then over the winter, I was just working on my swing. And then by the spring, I was out playing. And he took me to play. And then he and I had, he was 17 or 18 years my senior. We played probably, you know, 65 or 70 different links courses in the UK. We had matches. He taught me how to play fast. We played match play. We never cared about our score. We only cared about beating the other one. And I eventually became his boss, you know, within about a year. And the two of us just continued this amazing relationship for quite a while. And it was just, he was the funniest person I know, mm-hmm. and certainly the one that I have to say, you know, taught me all about Scottish match play.
You are listening to The Voice. Luke Risi is the author of a new memoir titled One for the Memory Banks. And it's interesting. I mean, you talked about playing collegiately. You played tennis. Where did you play at? And I have to wonder, too, as far as crossing over from tennis into golf, I mean, did tennis help you as far as making that transition?
Well, first of all, as I said, you give me a hockey player, and a hockey player knows how to hit a puck with a long stick, okay? So, you know, they're generally speaking going to be pretty good golfers. You take a tennis player, and we're able to hit a moving tennis ball with we've got a sort of a longer, a bigger thing to hit it
yeah.
with, but we're able to hit the darn thing. So our hand-eye is not bad. The problem we've got in tennis is we tend to hit a top-spin forehand, which, you know, which means my miss can go low and right. Okay, so if I'm going to miss the ball, it's going low and right, as opposed to, you know, wide left. But basically, I found that, you know, tennis was very helpful. It was really helpful for chipping because you sort of just, it felt like I was hitting just a short little shot. I think I feel very comfortable with ball sports. I like them. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it. I like hitting things. I thought as a tennis player, it's a pretty natural transition to play. At the same time, you sort of got to get used to the fact that the ball's not moving, and it's much more of a thinking person's game. And, you know, that 6 inches between the ears can be a pretty difficult space to traverse when you're doing it.
Okay, so you're in California now, but growing up, I mean, you're a Midwest guy. You grew up in a small town in Ohio. I have to wonder, I mean, like going over to the UK, to Scotland, I mean, what's it like to play golf over there?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, I grew up in a small town. You know, tennis wasn't even something we even, I mean, golf wasn't something we even thought about. You know, that we had very good golf courses there. Donald Ross built, you know, Granville Golf Club. But,
you bet. Yep.
You know, that wasn't a place that I was doing it. So, you know, it was a nice place to play. Obviously, Jack Nicklaus was a reasonably well-known golfer, was from, you know, not that far away, but it seemed like a world away when I was growing up. Going over to Scotland, you know, what I find is so amazing about the place is that, you know, you don't just have 15 or 20 great golf courses. You've got 100, and you've got so many, you know, the links courses are open. They're natural. They flow with the land. And as you play it, every hole is sort of the kind of hole where you said, if an architect made that, they'd probably get in trouble. But, you know, they just built it as it was built. They didn't move a lot of dirt. And so you have a very, very natural style of play, and you can get the ball in the hole in a lot of different ways. You know, what I also love is the fact that you've got great access. So the public access is amazing. People are able to go out and play, you know, and you're not just defined. I think in America, too often, golf is defined as, you know, with whom do you work, and then you go play, as opposed to over there, it's do you play, and then, oh, by the way, you know, where do you work? What do you do? But that's not, those questions don't even get asked. It's more of a, are you a person who knows how to play fast? Can you play well? And do you give putts or not give putts? So
we are teeing it up in our golf segment. Author Luke Rees is with us of the new memoir, One for the Memory Banks. And I have to wonder, too, I mean, just how fast is golf played over in Europe?
So I would say the average round, if you took a group of four people and they're playing a match, they're playing better ball, they're in Scotland, they're probably going to get around in about 3 hours, maybe a little faster. You know,
wow.
First of all, it's typically cold, it's typically windy, and they're typically moving. You know, there's one ball seems to always be in the air at all times. It's ready golf, if you will. If you play in Ireland, it's a little different. The Irish just don't stop talking. They just never do. In the middle of their swing, in the middle of your swing, it just doesn't matter. So they're telling stories. They play fast, but they talk long. So I'd say in Ireland, it tends to be more of like a 3.5 to 3 hour and 45 minute round. In Scotland, it tends to be quick and moving. And two people get around very, very quickly.
Do you notice that players, their pre-shot routine is just a lot shorter? I mean, they're just stepping right into their shot and hitting it. It's not, you know, taking 40 seconds.
Yeah. Well, part of it is with the amount of wind you've got, the measurement of how many yards do I have, and then stepping up and saying, well, you're 163. 163 doesn't matter that much. You sort of step up and go, yeah, you know, I've been playing this course. It's about a 5 iron into the wind. It's about an 8 iron, you know, when the wind's downwind. So it's just, I think they just get used to sort of having things be approximate and not having things be precise. I mean, we're used to a game that's much closer to darts. You know, we're throwing things and having them try to land by the hole and stop. They're basically firing them up in the direction of the hole and then having them roll up in that way. So they're using contours, they're using banks, and I think that requires probably a little less preparation and foresight, you know, as you're going through it, especially as the wind is pretty variable.
We are up against the clock and the holidays are just around the corner. And so we're going to extend this invitation here the next few weeks. We want to really take a deep dive into your book, One for the Memory Bank. So we've all got some homework to do in the meantime. We're going to go out and get a copy of the book and read it. And the author is Luke Rees. And I know there's just so much more that we can talk about. And so thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on the book. You know, when our readers, they get the book, what are they going to find when they open it up?
So what they're going to find is it's not about me. It's a story of essentially about a guy named Alan Bond, who was my mentor. He's a Scot who was, you know, 20 years, 17, 18 years older than I am. He and I travel around and play probably, you know, in the book in about 25 different courses. And it's essentially a travelogue that, you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to write about a thing that allows you to be there. Several people who have reviewed it have said, you know, you sort of feel like you're in the match, you're there.
Mm.
And it's really the essence of us playing, but it's really a chance to go see a bunch of courses that normally people don't talk about. I, of course, have included things like Royal County Down, Portmarnock, Royal Dornoch, and some classics. But several of the matches take place at slightly lesser known places, Macrahanish, Machree, London Links, you know, the Troon Portland course.
Oh, yeah.
And we sort of want to make it fun. So you'd get an idea as to like what you're playing and how, and really, really get a feel for like what it would be like to be over in Scotland or England or Wales or Ireland.
It is a fascinating read. Go ahead and get a copy of that. One for the Memory Banks. Always a true pleasure to have with us. And that is the author, Luke Rees. We look forward to another conversation here in just a few weeks, okay? Thank you, Luke.
Alyssa, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank
of
you.
Course. Much more coming your way. Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network and the Big E Sports Show coming to you from Houston on this Saturday morning. Perhaps you need replacement parts and tools for your repair, maintenance, or restoration project. O'Reilly Auto Parts, you know what? They've got you covered. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They know what it takes to get the job done right the first time. In fact, professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. You can stop by and talk to one of their professional parts people today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It's so exciting. It is week 9 of the NFL season, and as promised, it is time to head to New York, and we're going to find out what is going on with the Jets as they prepare to face the Patriots, some Monday Night Football action, and they're looking to regroup after the Chiefs and that latest beatdown. So we're delighted to welcome back. That is Christian Dyer. He's the Jets reporter for Sports Illustrated. Good morning, Christian.
Happy weekend.
It's good to have you on the program. And before we preview, as I mentioned, the Monday Night Football game between the Jets and the Patriots, just what are some of your takeaways from the NFL's worst team playing the defending Super Bowl champion last week? I mean, God bless the Jets. They are struggling mightily, and they are 0-9 right now.
Yeah, they're staring 0-9 right in the face. And I think, you know, it's a little bit of a surprise given the offseason. And we talked about it, you know, throughout the offseason and last year, that the weakness of this Jets team was the offensive line. And it seemed like that had maybe been taken care of during the offseason. They went out and really addressed the offensive line, not necessarily high-end players coming in, although the drafting of Mekhi Becton in the first round at number 11 overall, a massive left tackle out Louisville, what was thought to be kind of one of those linchpin type signings. But the Jets did bring in a total of 4 new starters, including Becton, in along the offensive line. This was a unit that was probably the worst offensive line in football last year by a mile. They were absolutely terrible in both the run game and pass protection. And at the end of the day, there was the thought that the unit couldn't possibly be any worse. And yet you look at the number of sacks that Sam Darnold and Joe Flacco, who's had 2 starts so far this year, have taken, the number of quarterback hits. It's well ahead of where the Jets were a year ago. And some of that is maybe unfair to blame the offensive line for. But when you really look at what the scheme, the lack of playmakers, their inability to run the ball, and then defensively the struggles without Jamal Adams, you know, it's amazing that they're only 0-8. I mean, if there was a way for them to be even worse, you know, I think at this point, potentially Alabama or Clemson might be able to give the New York Jets a pretty good run in the game.
Sports Illustrated's Jets reporter Christian Dyer with us at Sports Map Radio Network this morning. And so you nailed it. You're talking about the biggest issue for the Jets, the offensive line. So in the offseason, they tried to make moves to improve in that particular category. I mean, how do you fix it? I mean, what do? You're in the middle of the season.
Yeah, there's probably not too much that can be done at this point. And I think there are a couple building blocks in place. But, you know, keep in mind that this was general manager Joe Douglas's first real offseason with the team. Douglas was brought in after the NFL draft last year, when Mike Maccagnan was kind of panned for his decisions and the way that he had built the team, including the salary cap decisions that were in place that kind of led to what the Jets are going through right now in terms of difficulty rebuilding. They didn't have a ton of cap space, which is part of the reason why they couldn't bring in those players like a Jack Conklin from Tennessee to bolster the offensive line, a Pro Bowl caliber player who could really kind of take it, upgrade the next level. They had to do some patchwork, and I think that's probably the best they could hope for at this point, is to get players off waivers and really to kind of get the younger guys who are maybe the undrafted free agents who are being dropped at this point, and be able to develop them and grow them, because there's not really a long-term solution on this roster along the offensive line other than Becton, the first-round pick, who's been absolutely tremendous. He was a home run selection by Joe Douglas in the draft, but he was also a little bit of a no-brainer given the performance that he had at the NFL Combine, coupled with 2 very good years at Louisville when he was really outstanding. So I think it's got to be a priority this offseason where the Jets come in and get 1, if not 2, of those Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen to really turn things around. It can't be patchwork players. It can't be players that you project to take the next step forward. I think that if they're going to protect their young quarterback and Sam Darnold, who I'm sure we'll talk about, if they're serious about protecting him, Melissa, it's got to be with someone proven and some talent that can definitely get the job done.
Sports Illustrated's Jets reporter, SI.com/Jets. You can check out his work. Christian Dyer is our very special guest this morning at Sports Map Radio Network. Okay, we're talking about the Jets. They're very hungry to get a win, but will they at least get one win on the season here in 2020? I mean, how optimistic are you? And I can't even imagine, like, give us the pulse. Like, what are the fans like right now?
Well, it's probably a good thing that there aren't allowing fans into MetLife Stadium right now. And I know we're teasing about a very serious situation with the coronavirus.
Right.
But it would be an ugly, ugly MetLife Stadium right now. And keep in mind that this is a fan base that a couple of years ago raised thousands upon thousands of dollars to fly planes over games, saying that the general manager then, John Idzik, should be fired. I mean, this is a group of fans that they're conditioned for suffering. There's the joke, Alyssa, around this part that J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 the Jets chant actually stands for just end the season. And I think that's always kind of the sentiment around week three, week four around these parts that the team can't get out of their own way. And you look at the fact that this year, the way that it's played out, it's hard to imagine them being favored in any situation. They've got the second toughest schedule in the league. I think there's a very legitimate chance that the Jets end up going 0-16 this year. They're the only winless team in football right now. And they have to be cheering for some of the other teams, such as the Giants and the Falcons and Jacksonville, to start rattling off a couple wins so that they can get that number one pick and have a little bit of destiny in their own hands heading into 2021.
Heading into Monday Night Football against the Patriots, when we talk about the Jets, what do you think about Bill Belichick's comments that he thinks the Jets are a lot better than they were last year? I mean, what do you think of that?
I think Bill Belichick has to keep his team motivated going up against an 0-18 that's gotten pretty well spanked the past few weeks. And Bill Belichick has always done a very good job of being complimentary of other teams. He's also a master of the mind games, and he knows that this is a game that his team, they're a desperate team as well in New England, but it's a game that they might be able to overlook. When you look at just the Jets and the way that they played the past 2 weeks. I mean, it was 3 weeks ago where they got shut out on the road against the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins aren't necessarily world beaters. They're a good team. They're on the ascend, but you know, this isn't the 85 Bears defense that we're talking about. So I think Bill Belichick had to come up with something. We've heard similar lines from Andy Reid, talking last week heading into the Jets game against the Chiefs, how this is a good football team. They're better than their record indicates. Listen, they're not. The Jets are who they are. They're 0-8, and they're a very poor team in terms of talent, especially with the fire sale they've gone through before the trade deadline, dropping a number of players.
The Jets are currently fourth in the AFC East, and they are coming off a loss against the Chiefs. So tell us this. Speaking of head coaches, we were just talking about Bill Belichick with the Patriots, but what kind of heat is the head coach for the Jets? What is he feeling? Is he even going to survive this season? I mean, his job security is not looking good.
No, it certainly isn't. I think the only reason why he may make it through the season, I think there's a couple reasons. One, Christopher Johnson is the CEO of the Jets. His brother, Woody Johnson, is the United States ambassador to the United Kingdom. His job situation may be in flux over the next couple of weeks. We still don't know everything that's going on with the election and with diplomats and everything else. And I certainly think that this could be a scenario where maybe the Jets are holding off until Woody Johnson, who returns, who's been the two-decade-long owner of the Jets, before making any type of decisions. And that probably wouldn't be anytime before the end of the NFL season. The Jets also have been had a lot of turnover, both at general manager and at head coach. If they were to fire Adam Gase, it would be their third head coach fired in the span of a decade. That's not a lot of job security, and that sends a message around the league and to potential head coaching candidates, Alyssa, that this is a team that doesn't give a whole lot of support and a lot of knee-jerk reactions if they were to get rid of Gase before the season's over. So at the end of the day, I think Adam Gase probably makes it through the year. However, dollars to donuts, and I'm not a betting man. My wife controls my wallet pretty strictly. But
you're a smart man.
It's for the best of us.
You
all.
Deposit, she withdraws, right?
Absolutely, but if she let out a couple dollars for me to be able to do so, I think I'd probably wager that Adam Gase is not the Jets head coach in 2021.
Okay, but Adam Gase did allow offensive coordinator Dowell Logans to call offensive plays. So, what have you seen from that as far as that shift?
Yeah, it's actually gotten worse, if possible, with the Jets offense.
Oh my God.
I know I sound very morose about this, and you know, I'm just a few moments away from saying that the Jets are the fifth team in the AFC East, and there's only four teams in the division. but it hasn't gotten better, and I think some of that is just the fact that this is really Dowell Loggins' first time calling plays, you know, in the NFL, in a game that means anything. I think that there's something to be said for that. I think a lot of it's personnel issues. And I think just quite frankly, at this point, the Jets are a little bit despondent right now. How can you not be at 0-8? And I can't help but think that that's also impacting the performance on the field. I mean, this is a team that's getting beat up by its fan base, it's getting beat up by the media, and there really isn't a whole lot to play for at this point for a group of personnel that's really subpar throughout the two deep. So I think the issues are bigger than the play calling, although the play calling at the beginning of the year when the Jets did have a pulse surely didn't help things. They got away from the run, and they really didn't take a whole lot of shots down the field, and that really impacted their ability to move the ball consistently.
Our NFL news and notes continues with Sports Illustrated's Jets reporter Christian Dyer after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network and the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to continue our NFL news and notes and the conversation with Sports Illustrated's Jets reporter, Christian Dyer. You know, when you're interviewing the players, I just have to wonder what the team morale, I mean, it's obviously terrible, but how did these guys keep going? I mean, what are they playing for?
Yeah, it's really something when you watch some of these press conferences and you interact and you participate, over the past month or so, I think consistently seeing that the players are focused kind of on just going out there and getting the job done. I think when you're 0-8, and I've covered a couple of these teams that aren't necessarily this bad, but that have had their struggles, the focus turns towards playing for pride, certainly. But there's a lot of players on this on this team that are signed to 1-, 2-, 3-year contracts or cap-friendly contracts who are hoping to extend their stay or put some good things on tape for next year for whoever their next suitor might be. So it doesn't necessarily become a hired gun mentality from my experience, Alyssa, but I think at the end of the day, a lot of these players go out there and they may be playing for the pride on the front of the jersey, but they're certainly paying for the next paycheck on the back of the jersey.
Okay, the question I've got to ask you, obviously, is the quarterback, Sam Darnold. Is he the quarterback for the future? Because the Jets general manager, Joe Douglas, he certainly seems to think so.
It's certainly a loaded question. I think a lot of it has to deal with where the Jets end up picking. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is the consensus number one pick. I think you can make a pretty good argument that Ohio State's Justin Fields, through two games so far, and that performance he had Saturday night a week ago, at Penn State with the 4 touchdowns, 313 passing yards, the ability he shows with his feet once in a while, when the play breaks down. I certainly think that if the Jets are in position to get one of those two young quarterbacks in the draft, they may look to move on from Sam Darnold. And the fact that they didn't make a trade of Darnold before the trade deadline, when a team like the Dallas Cowboys, who desperately need a quarterback, could have been perhaps a possible trade partner, is maybe telling that the Jets aren't going to rush into a decision with Darnold. They do hold a high number of picks in the draft through all the moves and the machinations that they've made during and before the trade deadline. And even before that, they've been accruing picks in this year, this upcoming draft. But I have to think that if they're in the position to get Trevor Lawrence, who's the golden boy, or Justin Fields, it may be tough to see Sam Darnold returning for a fourth year in the green and white. It hasn't worked out. he certainly is a better quarterback and deserving of a better situation than what he has with the Jets. But my, oh my, if you can get one of those two young quarterbacks and kind of kickstart the rebuild, I think that would be a pretty easy sell to Jets ownership.
Okay, the Jets, the Patriots, Monday Night Football, and let's talk about the Patriots quickly. They have certainly had their share of struggles. I mean, what is going on this season? Because they find themselves in unfamiliar territory. What are they, 2-5?
Yeah, and you know what? They are going through the struggles, but you kind of see a sense of purpose. There's a rebuild going on with the Patriots. They're needing to weed out a few players and get a new direction. I think perhaps we're learning that Cam Newton isn't necessarily the locked-in improvement over Tom Brady that everyone heralded a few months ago, and a number of people were saying that the offense was going to be better and improved. Well, guess what? There's only one greatest of all time, and he's very difficult to replace, even at 67 or however old Tom Brady is these days. It ends up being a situation where I think the Patriots are regrouping, rebuilding. They're going to have a lot of cap space going into 2021. This year was about riding it out. I do think that there's a lot of optimism that the Patriots in the next year can return to being the top of the AFC East, but they have to ride out this year.
Okay, only 30 seconds. What do you think about Tom Brady taking in Antonio Brown?
Well, listen, it worked out, almost worked out one time before. I think if he'd been given a little bit more leeway and flexibility in New England, I think this could end up being a tremendous pairing here. I think certainly Tampa Bay, if they weren't favorites in the NFC, are now.
Good stuff. Sports Illustrated's Jets reporter. Check him out. Awesome stuff online. SI.com/Jets. That is Christian Dyer. Thank you so much, Christian. Have a great weekend with the family.
You too.
That, of course, was Christian Dyer from Sports Illustrated. A big thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive.